Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Before we do get started, I want to encourage you, as you're making your travel plans, remember this simple name, JohnnyDollarAir.com. JohnnyDollarAir.com is a Priceline affiliate. And so you get all the advantages of booking through Priceline. You're able to name your own price on hotels, rental cars, or airline tickets, plus choose from several published specials, just like searching on any other site. But if you go to JohnnyDollarAir.com, part of your purchase price goes to support the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. So when you're making your travel plans, remember JohnnyDollarAir.com first. Now it is time for today's episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Flight 6 Matter, Part 5.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Here is your call to Mexico City, senor.
Oh, thanks. Hello?
Macklin, Department of Civil Air Transport.
Hi, Mac.
Dollar, what have you learned in Acapulco?
Not very much, I'm afraid.
But you said you were following the girl down there. Marvel Terrence.
Yeah, and a few others who might have had a hand in the explosion aboard Flight 6. Beneficiaries of the insured on that flight.
What others?
Ramon de Lagos, whose wife died in the crash. Don Serrano, her brother. Bill Blakely, whose business partners were aboard.
Well, have you and Gino learned anything from them? From the girl?
Not yet.
But you said she might know who caused that explosion aboard the plane.
Right, and she promised to talk.
Well?
Your little helper, Gino, and I just pulled her body out of the surf down below the hotel here.
Johnny? Murder?
Yeah.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Acapulco, Mexico, to the Home Office Guaranteed Transport Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Flight 6 matter. Expense account, final page. Item 12, $1.80 for the phone call to Mac Macklin in Mexico City. I had to get Mac out of bed to tell him what had happened. That Marvel Terrence had been murdered. That somebody had silenced the girl around whom the whole case had seemed to center, since Flight 6 had exploded in midair 3 nights before and carried the passengers and crew to their deaths. Mac was shocked and offered any additional help I might need. But he had no new information at his end, and it was obvious now that any answers would have to be found right here in Acapulco. As I hung up the phone, Gino Romero came rushing in from the hotel terrace.
Senor Dollar.
What is it, Gino?
A prowler is out on the hotel grounds. The police car has got to block off the road at the bottom of the slope.
Good, come on.
The stairs are over this way, senor.
Right with you. A little light wouldn't hurt anything down here.
It's no time. This way, into the brush is footpath.
All right, lead the way.
Over there is only 100 feet to the cliff. The other side is the road for the hotel. Here is the only place anybody can go. It's down this slope.
Yeah, but there are plenty of places to hide.
And see, senor, but it's a matter... Oh, wait. Listen.
We could hear someone moving through the jungle growth a few yards away, moving swiftly but cautiously. Then a sudden silence. Whoever it was, it also stopped and was listening for Gino and me. We waited for the fugitive to move again, straining our ears, trying to tag the location. Seconds passed. Then a slight rustle ahead of us. Gino nudged me and we slipped quietly toward the sound.
Senor, Parece hombre.
Get your hands up. Well, well.
Buenas noches, señor Dollar.
You seem to be quite a night owl, Don Serrano.
Not ordinarily, señor. The circumstances which place me in this rather awkward position are not usual ones, I assure you.
You were up there prowling around the hotel. Why?
I was looking for my unmentionable brother-in-law.
Ramon de Lagos, why? What made you think he'd be here?
I went to his hotel. He was not in his room. I knew he had not been able to see Miss Terence since she had spent the evening with you. So I assumed he might be waiting for her here, at her hotel. And my assumption has, of course, been proven correct.
Did you see him?
No, but I heard the police discussing the murder of Miss Terence. It was obviously Ramon's handiwork.
Still after him, huh?
My feeling about Ramon is not a secret, señor.
Nor his about you. So why did you go to his hotel?
To kill him. Why else?
Time was running out, so we took Don Serrano back to the hotel to the police. One very important person hadn't put in an appearance. Gina went down to Bill Blakely's room, knocked on the door, then opened it with a passkey and went in. Blakely wasn't there. We searched the room.
The bed has been sleeping, señor.
Yeah, I notice. But for how long, that's the question.
It's possible he was wake up when the señorita screams before she is killed.
He might have been. He must have dressed. His pajamas are there on the floor. I wonder.
Quién sabe if it was a quarrel of lovers, the jealousy. He did not like it when the señorita would go with you tonight.
I don't think it's that simple, Gino. Let's get this bag open, have a look inside. Maybe we can... It's not even locked. He seems to have been traveling light.
They're on the top, señor.
Yeah, I see.
What is it?
Box of .38 caliber cartridges spilled open. And that piece of oilcloth. He had a gun packed in here. No, it's gone. He got up, loaded a gun and left, took the gun with him. If it was before the scream, that's one thing. But if it was afterward, then...
What are you thinking, señor?
I think we'd better take the police with us, get over to the Hotel Caleta and check up on our third suspect.
Ramon? But Don Serrano said he is not there.
Don Serrano could say anything. I think we'd better get over there, Gino, and do it fast. The clerk said room 34. That's the second door down.
Si.
Let's go. Ramon. Ramon.
Who is it?
Johnny Dollar, open up. Watch yourself, Gino.
Si.
Come on in, Dollar.
You're Blakely.
Yeah. Better hand over the gun, Blakely. You won't get a chance to use it now. The police are out in the lobby.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Ramon didn't show up, huh?
I wish he had. That's all I was asking, just one clear shot at him.
Are you sure he's the one who killed her?
Sure enough.
Did you see him?
No, but he's the one. She was scared of him, Dollar. She told me earlier in the afternoon, before you got down here to Acapulco.
Told you what?
She said Ramon had followed her here from Mexico City, that he'd been acting strange. She said she was glad I was staying at the same hotel, that she didn't want to see him or talk to him.
Yeah, it figures all right. It checks with what she said to me last night. If she'd only given me a little more to go on.
She was a real great kid, Dollar. The greatest as far as I was concerned.
Yeah.
As soon as I realized what had happened, I loaded my gun and came here to wait for him. I figured he'd try to get back to his room. But he didn't show. It's too bad. She was a real great kid. And I'd have died for her if she asked me to. I loved her. She was a...
Mira! Ahí está! There he is!
Come on, Gino.
Sí, señor.
Ramon had been spotted. He started to enter the hotel, saw the police, turned and ran. He was armed with a pistol. He'd fired a shot at one of the police officers and then jumped over the balustrade and disappeared into the dark curve of Caleta Beach. The police cars quickly threw a cordon along the bayfront street and blocked off both ends of the stretch of shoreline. For the moment, Ramon was trapped somewhere on that beach. He tipped his hand now, and he was desperate and dangerous, and he had a gun. Gino and I went out on the beach after him.
There's many places to hide here.
Not for long. They'll have some more police here within a few minutes. Come on.
It's maybe better we wait, señor. I do not think Ramon is planned to be taken alive.
I can still see that girl, Gino, lying at the foot of the cliff.
Sí, señor. I remember. I speak it.
What is it?
There, by the water, is... No, I am wrong, senor. It's only a boat pulled up on the sand.
Yeah, it's a paddle boat.
Well, I think it's better maybe we separate, senor. I look in the pavilion, the cabañas. You stay close by the water. In this way, we are have him between us.
Good idea, Gino. But you've got the rough end of it. Take care of yourself.
Si, senor.
Well. Not much cover along the shoreline here.
Do not move, senor. Do not make a sound.
Well, Roman. So you were hiding behind that boat.
I have nothing to lose now, senor. If you make one move or try to call out, I will kill you.
Yeah, I think you would. All right, then, what comes next?
This boat. You will push it into the water, but be very careful. If you make any noise, even by accident, I will kill you. Quickly now. Hurry.
Relax, Roman. You don't have a chance anyway.
We will see. Careful now. Be quiet. Good. Now get in, quickly.
Sure.
Take the paddle, head out across the bay, and be very quiet, or I will kill you.
All right, Roman. You're just wasting your time. They'll have a police launch out here within 10 minutes.
I do not think so. They will not know.
Quiet! Quiet! One more sound from that paddle, and I will shoot.
Marvel Terrence. Why did you kill her, Roman?
She made me crazy. So beautiful. And with so very much money. I thought she would be most easy once Maria, my wife, was dead.
Then it was you who blew up the airliner in order to kill your wife and have a clear field to go after Marvel.
Marvel did not know I was married, and Maria was going to tell
her. So you sabotaged a plane and killed her, along with 10 other innocent people. And what happened tonight? Did Marvel turn you down?
He said she was suspicious of me. And she was going to tell you about it in the morning. And she said she was falling in love with you. She made me crazy.
I wish you had got back into that hotel, Roman. I wish you'd got there before I did, while Bill Blakely was still waiting for you with a loaded gun in his hand.
Be quiet and paddle faster. We must get farther up the coast in order... What is that?
Police launch. What did you think? I told you didn't have a chance.
No, they could not get here so soon.
Well, I forgot to mention the fact that they'd already phoned for one.
And then they do not know yet we are out here. Good. Keep paddling. Quickly.
He half turned his head to look back toward the launch. He took a chance and swung the paddle. Bang! His shot went wild and he didn't get a second try. I caught him back in the air and he dropped like a log. The police located our boat a few minutes later and hauled him over the gunwale and into the launch. And that should have been the end of it. But none of us realized Ramon's insane desperation. He'd only been pretending unconsciousness. On board the launch, he snatched a gun from one of the officers and tried to take over the boat. He didn't have a chance. He took a full volley of shots from 3 police pistols square in the chest. Expense account item 13, $312.20. Hotel and incidentals in Acapulco and Mexico City and plane fare back to the States. Expense account total, $608.10. End of expense account, end of report. Remarks? I'll never see another sunset now without thinking of her somewhere out beyond it. I hope she doesn't feel alone anymore. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, there'll be another intriguing story for you beginning next Monday night.
Next week, a dead girl comes to life in a case that's packed with lies. Yet every one of them comes true. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Virginia Gregg, Ben Wright, Edgar Berrier, Don Diamond, Russ Thorson, and Jack Moyles. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. I have to admit, this is one of those head-scratchers of an episode as we consider the actions of Marvel Terrence. Marvel makes a conclusion that a man is most likely the person behind the killing of 10 people. And she goes ahead and tells him, one, that she suspects it, two, that she's falling in love with Johnny Dollar, and three, she's going to tell Johnny Dollar about her suspicions in the morning. These are not the things you do if you conclude somebody is a deranged killer who's already killed more than 10 people. But other than that part, this was a pretty exciting episode and another tragic end for Johnny Dollar. I don't think it was as tragic as the end of the Valentine matter, but still a kind of a sad ending and an indication that unfortunately, if Johnny gets any closer to a woman than just flirting, there's a high probability that she won't last till the end of the serial. All right, well, now we're going to go ahead and wrap up the Carter Brown serial. It's time for High Sky Hoodoo Part 4.
Carter Brown Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense, based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
I just sat there in Jim Berg's office and stared from his face to the gun held steadily as a rock in his hand. Somehow it took a long time to sink in. The thought that I'd messed it up, that Whitney Kent, jet pilot and so-called jinx, had also been a jerk. Burke moved round behind my chair, felt my pockets and took out my gun. Then he stepped back to the table and picked up the phone.
Don't try anything, Whit. I can talk into this and watch you with no trouble. Berg, I got company. Whitney Kent. He brought me some news from L.A. Van Eck squealed. Yeah, that's right, they didn't pull out fast enough. No, he's on his own, I think. Probably had a fancy idea of taking both of us in or something. You'll be right over? Fine. Yeah, we might need a hostage. Okay.
Well, I'm finally getting hep.
Took you a while, didn't it?
The perfect setup. The chief of plant security. Who the heck would question where he went inside the plant?
Nobody ever did.
You could get right next to an engineer and he wouldn't even notice you. You could sabotage the planes. You could split my parachute.
Of course. You see, being an ex-FBI man is the best thing a guy can be. Nobody doubts that he's honest. Nobody wonders if somebody comes along and offers him 50 grand whether he'll stay honest. They don't even imagine anybody offering him the dough. And that's where the boss was smart, picking me for the job.
He must have picked you long before he joined the firm as a director. From the time when I ditched the first F-92K.
That's right, he did. He's been planning this a long time. That sounds like him now. But keep nice and still, Whitney.
Oh, Jim, I... Kent!
Don't tell me you're surprised to see me, Mr. Moore.
What's going on? What's the gun for, Berg?
This! Don't move, Whitney.
What's the idea of knocking your boss cold?
Him? My boss? You got it cockeyed, Whitney. This is my boss coming now.
Well, Jim, everything under control?
Holmeyer!
What's that fool Moore doing in here?
I didn't wait to ask. He just came in at the wrong time.
So, you were going to take us in, Whitney, all on your own.
I thought it was Moore. I never dreamed it was you.
I'd have been very surprised if you had. Jim, I presume the police are watching the plant.
I guess so. They've been around all afternoon.
Kitty, we don't have an F-92K. We could have had our young hero fly us out.
Berg, you hit me.
And I'll do it again if you step out of line.
Has everyone gone raving mad around here?
No, Mr. Moore. Let me introduce you to our sabotage chiefs.
Owen and Berg.
That's right.
I think you'd better keep quiet now, both of you. It's a good thing you called me right away, Jim. Gives us plenty of time.
For what?
For getting out of here.
They'll be watching the plant. They'll have roadblocks, probably. We don't have a hope of getting out of here unless we make ourselves invisible.
That may not be impossible.
Can I ask you one question?
Sure.
It's a one-word question. Why?
I guess you're entitled to the answer. Do you know who owns the Ace Aero Corporation, Whitney?
The stockholders, I guess.
You know who the stockholders are?
No idea.
Me.
You?
Through certain dummies, of course. But I made an error of judgment. I thought Ace Aero was the firm to buy. It had a brilliant top executive, Milton Moore.
Thank you.
But it lacked a designer like Gene Latimer. I had everything but the right plane to build. Kent Aircraft had the right plane, but I knew your father needed capital to expand his production to meet his demand. So, I figured the whole thing out very carefully.
If you bought into the company, nobody could possibly expect you to sabotage it.
Exactly. And by persuading Moore, my own chief executive, to leave Ace Aero and come here too, and by arranging to lend him the money, it meant I had a 50% interest in Kent Aircraft. So nobody could think for a minute I was anything but genuine.
Oh, Whitney, I assure you I had not the faintest idea of all this.
I believe you. But of course, Holmeyer, long before you bought in on us, you took the precaution of buying Jim Berg for yourself.
Of course. I was determined that the F-92K wasn't going to make good.
That meant sending Kent Aircraft bankrupt, so you could buy out at a nominal figure.
Naturally. And then I'd have produced the F-92K without bugs.
A neat little scheme. But it didn't work out, Holmeyer.
No. The trouble with being clever is that you have to employ others, some of whom are not at all clever. I got a good man in Berg here, but Berg got a moron in Van Eck.
Well, Slade said he was okay, and I figured his word was good enough. Anyway, aren't we wasting too much time talking? We ought to figure how we're going to get out of here.
I've already done that, Jim.
You have? Well, how?
If we can make Los Angeles, we'll be all right.
Oh, maybe, but first we have to get out of here, and how are we going to do that?
I'll show you. Whitney, you brought your father's car down here?
Yeah.
Does that make it sound easier, Jim? Whitney drove his father's car down to the plant tonight. He'll drive it back again.
Well, I don't get it.
I'd have thought a child could understand it. He'll drive it out with the three of us on the floor. They know Chuck Kent's Cadillac, and with Whitney driving it, they let him through. I don't see why that setup shouldn't take us through the roadblocks as well.
You're taking Moore along?
We can't leave him here to raise the alarm, can we?
Okay, then what are we waiting for?
Is that the only gun you have, Jim?
Well, there's one on the table that Whitney was carrying.
What's yours?
The Luger 32.
And that's a silencer on it, eh?
Sure. Doesn't make any more noise than a cork out of a bottle.
Let me see.
Here you are.
Thanks. I'd like to know if the silencer actually works.
What? You shot him carelessly, in cold blood.
I don't need him anymore. And you and young Whitney can call it an object lesson. If Berg had been more careful in choosing the people we needed, Kent Aircraft would have been mine now.
I think you're crazy, stark crazy.
Am I? We'll go out to the car now. You will drive it, Whitney. I shall be on the floor in the back, and so will Moore. I'll give you a practical exercise in ethics, Whitney. If the car gets held up for any reason and looks like being searched, I shall shoot Moore first. His life is your direct responsibility.
A couple of minutes later, we were in the car. We rolled through the gates. The guard on the gate gave me a smart salute, and then we were out on the highway heading towards San Bernardino with Los Angeles beyond.
Demonstrates the power of advertising, doesn't it? They say, there goes Chuck Kent's car, and never even think that somebody other than Chuck or his son might be in it.
I guess not.
You can pick it up a bit, Whitney. I needn't remind you that I'm in a hurry to get to Los Angeles.
I boosted the speedometer up to 70. I wondered where the police who were supposed to be watching the plant could be. There was no sign of them, or of any roadblocks.
Can't you go faster?
You want to get to L.A. in one piece, don't you? What are you going to do when you get there?
I have good contacts. I'll just disappear.
I meant with the car and us.
I'll probably have that figured out by the time we get there. You just concentrate on the road.
But I was also concentrating on the rear vision mirror. It was obvious that Hallmeyer was going to get rid of me and Milton Moore, unless something happened to stop him. Then a pair of headlights gleamed in the mirror. I thought maybe they were the something. I moved my right hand forward till my fingers closed round the switch that operated the head and tail lights. I started flicking the SOS signal with the lights. If the car behind was a police car, maybe they'd get it. Then I heard something which made me sure they had.
What's that?
Sounds like a siren to me.
Police! Just remember, Moore gets it first and then you. I have nothing to lose.
I realized that. The police car was practically abreast by now, the driver signaling me to pull over. There was a white fence running parallel to the highway on my right. It wasn't a hard decision to make. If I stopped, the cops would look in the car. Hallmeyer would certainly shoot Moore and almost certainly still have time to shoot me. The alternative at least offered a sporting chance. I swung the wheel over hard. When I came to, I felt peculiar. When I looked up, I realized why. One leg was hanging up high, straight and stiff. And everything around was white except a face which peered down at me. That was red, with anger.
I thought you weren't going to play heroes. Now look where you wound up. In hospital with a broken leg.
Take it easy, will you, Pop? I had no choice. What happened to Moore and Hallmeyer?
Moore's in the next bed. He's got a broken leg, too. Hallmeyer was the only one who got out without a scratch.
What?
Only thing is, he started firing at the cops. They got sore and fired back. Exit Hallmeyer.
Now, that's enough, boss. I won some time with that son of yours, too.
Okay, okay.
Well, well, Miss Pearson in person. Come to congratulate me?
What for?
Well, for my quick thinking, my cleverness, my ingenuity.
Huh?
Well, if I hadn't given that SOS signal to the cops behind me...
They didn't know anything about an SOS signal. They were pulling you over to tell you that your taillights were on the blink.
Oh, no. What's the use of being a quick-witted hero when the cops are so dumb?
Darling, you're a dope. But I'll kiss you just the same.
You know, when you did that, I distinctly felt my broken leg twitch and start to mend.
Not for at least 3 weeks.
3 weeks?
And a good thing, too. At least I won't have to worry about what you're doing. I'll know. You'll just be lying here.
They have nurses here.
But you'll never catch them, darling. Not with one leg swung over your head. On the other hand, I'll have you where I want you. When I bring the preacher along.
Preacher? I don't want any preacher.
But I do, sweetheart. Then I can fix it so you'll always be where I want you. Permanently.
Mrs. Carter Brown, you know, when I finished writing that story, I was surprised at myself. I'd actually left Whitney with some of his bones still unbroken, but I guess you've got to be kind to your heroes sometimes. Well, I'll be back with another of my books for you. The next one's called Crime for a King, and the king in this case is named Roger, a private detective who discovers that diamonds really are some girl's best friends. So this is Carter Brown saying so long for now. Be seeing you.
In High Sky Hoodoo, you heard Pamela Page as Sue Pearson, while as Whitney Kent, you heard our star, Keith Buckley. The Carter Brown Mystery Theater, based on the best-selling novels by Carter Brown, is dramatized and directed by Morris Travers for Grace Gibson Radio Productions.
Welcome back. Well, in one way, I'm pleasantly surprised by this end. Sometimes the amateur sleuth just turns out to be incredibly lucky and garners, solves everything lickety-split. Here our hero completely misjudges who Mr. Big is, as well as getting blindsided by Mr. Big's lieutenant. And in order to save his life, he has to get himself in a car accident that ends up with him breaking his leg. I also thought it was a humorous touch that the police were not actually responding to an SOS. They were merely wanting to let him know that he had problems with his taillights. And of course, it brings up an interesting point, and that's the decline of Morse code. It is such a part of so many vintage programs and even some newer productions. Yet you have to wonder what the future is in Morse code with the decline of the telegraph. Probably less people know it now than any time in the last 100 years. You know, which is somewhat funny because, I watch a lot of science fiction films, and I remember in the 1990s, they released Star Trek V. And in that film, they portrayed the crew of the Enterprise being well acquainted with Morse code. Alas, I have a feeling that it'll be a lost language entirely. The other interesting thing about this episode was that the way she did the proposal almost made it seem more ominous than the death threats. Definitely a typical Carter Brown mystery, since he has no reason to keep his characters footloose and fancy free, and he could marry them off or put them on the road to marriage pretty easily without worrying about future prospects of various series. Well, I do need to let you know that we will not have a Carter Brown mystery next week due to the fact that we have a lost episode of the five-part serial. Part three is missing. Parts one and two will be played on Monday, and parts four and five will be played on Friday for yours truly, Johnny Dollar. So we will return with the next Carter Brown mystery in 2 weeks. So join us for that then, and for Johnny Dollar on Monday and Friday of next week. And be sure to listen tomorrow. We'll have the lineup for you, and I'm sure you'll enjoy that as always. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.